Hi everyone, my name is Vanessa Bierschaeffer. I'm a friend of Catherine Austin Fitz, and it's Catherine who invited me to do this series on Europe, which is called Via Europa. Why Via Europa? Simply because Via in Latin means road, and the Roman Empire was a big walled road builder all across Europe and all across France. So if you follow the Roman roads, you find all the history of Europe, the past centuries. I came across one of Catherine's interviews in 2016 or 2017. She was talking about Arthur Andersen and Enron. And I became suddenly very interested because I used to work for Arthur Andersen. It was my first job. I was doing US tax returns for European company in Brussels or American companies working in Europe. And I never quite understood what happened after September 11th, but I was sure something happened that wasn't related directly to September 11th, but something that has its roots way before that date. And when I heard Catherine discussing this period of time, what happened then, I realized that she had an enormous amount of information, and it was very interesting to listen to her explaining what has happened. So I contacted her, and she sent me one of her stories, well, the main story, which is Dillon, Reed & Co., the aristocracy of profit making. And I asked Catherine if I could translate her work into French, because I thought it was so important for the world to know that it will be great to have it in French. It took me almost a year to translate it piece by piece. Actually, at that time, I was pregnant. And it's also a piece of work that you can't translate right away. You have to read it through once, and then piece by piece, and then read it again to be sure that it's the correct translation. And it's also some parts are very emotional, because you realize that, especially the privatization of prisons, you realize the damages that have been done to people and just for profits. And so it was, certain parts are difficult to read in that sense, because you can get very emotional for a while. In 2018, Catherine was in Europe, so we met there in France, in the south of France. And we discussed and we exchanged, of course, the topics we both are interested in. And more recently, she asked me if I could do a series on what's going on in Europe. Actually, which I found very interesting, because and more than just what's going on in Europe, what's interesting for me is to compare what's going on in the US with what's going on in Europe. As we're used to saying in France, what happens in the US will eventually come in France. It could be 10, 20, 30 years. Now it's more accelerated because of the media, the internet, but the habits, the new form of consumption, the new trends come from the US and then settle in Europe. And more lately, I'll say that it's more forced than the natural or genuine evolution. Right now, I'm talking from Paris, France, in the Latin Quarter, which is the 5th arrondissement, where I run my real estate office agency. I'm also a trustee of the Institute of General Semantics, and I have a background in accounting, law, politics, and a bit of psychology too. Basically, I like to say that I'm a salesperson, though it's not really what I thought I will be doing, but I enjoy doing it because selling is not only opening the door to a new apartment or making people contact each other. It's more advice, and while you're doing the sales and you're meeting a lot of people, and after a while and as the years go by, in 10 minutes, you know what's happening in someone's mind, just asking a few questions. It's something we do naturally. And I think I've learned more doing sales than reading psychological books or books on psychology. Anyway, it's not today's topic. Today's topic is what just happened in France after the lockdown. We had the second round of the municipal elections. These municipal elections are very important because they only happen every 6 years. Normally, you have two rounds and 2 weeks in between the rounds. This time, we had the first round one day just before the lockdown and the second round 2 months and a half afterwards, which basically it was never experienced before, maybe during the Second World War, maybe during the First World War, I don't know. I haven't checked, but it was in my lifetime, I've never seen something like that. Just once, what happened, It was 12 years ago, Mr. Hollande decided to just postpone the municipal elections for a year, and that was done, which was kind of a shock, but understood. And this time it was due to the lockdown. Also, what happened is that during the first round, the majority of cities got their town council elected, but for the big cities like Paris, Lyon, Toulouse, Perpignan, Marseille, they had to wait for the second round to get a final result. One consequence of the lockdown is that only 40% of people turn up to the polls, which is a very low percentage. And the second thing is that the Green Party took over main cities like Bordeaux, Lyon, and I think Strasbourg too, and all of our smaller cities in France, which has never been the case before. Now you have to understand that these green people are former socialist members, or they're coming from the far left, or they're new into politics and thinking that being green is better than being a former socialist or a center-right liberal. The profile of the newly elected green people is that most of them have never worked in a company or in the private sector. They most often come from the NGOs or from the administration, or their lawyers, no offense to the lawyers there. It's just that their profile doesn't match the productive part of the country. When I say productive, I mean people who are making stuff. Produce goods, do services that are really helpful for people who need care or taking care of children. Or their profile of middle management in NGOs and French administration. So I'm not quite sure that they'll be in line with developing the economy. I don't think that's going to be their goal. I think their main goal will be to justify the reduction of income and the reduction of investment in infrastructure. Or maybe they will put money in new infrastructure, but I'm afraid it'll be more like windmills or smart cities and everything that will allow for more control of the people, reduction of the number of cars in the cities, reduction of the circulation, which basically means a reduction in the usual trade and commerce. And these, actually the green interests most of the time are aligned with the capital and the big, big company interests like the GAFA and their equivalent. The reason why I'm saying this is that Anne Hidalgo has just been re-elected in Paris. She's a former socialist. She made an alliance with the Green. And she's been fighting against the cars for many years. And it's very, very difficult to drive through Paris. To give you an example, 10 years ago, I will cross the Seine River. I will go to different arrondissements a couple of times a week. Right now, I really have to be really motivated just to do that. So it basically means that I'm staying in the area I'm more familiar with, which is closer to my office or to my apartment. So I guess that the future years for these big cities are going to be more control of the circulation, more control of the consumption and the way people behave. And we can anticipate maybe for the next national elections that we could have a very prominent, very important presidential candidate, at least from the Green Party. Of course, they're very liberal, and it's just like the green themes have been co-opted by the left, while in fact the green theories at the very beginning were more from the right and conservative parties. That happens, I think, in many countries, Germany alike. And I think what's going on in France is what has already happened in Germany. Okay, we can say that the lockdown is the reason for this surge in the green votes. Another reason I think you will find in one of our best socialist and historian, Emmanuel Todd's book, called the last one is called The New War of Classes in France. And what Emmanuel Todd says is very interesting in the fact that he says that it's not so much the inequalities that have arisen in France that are made bigger. It's just that everybody has lost income and has been pauperized in their own way. So we have different classes of people. We have blue collars. We have the soft belly, as they call it, which is made of 10, 20, 30% of the population. We all find teachers, self-employed, people doing services in the service business, communication, etc. And at the top, you will have the top management, 10% of the population, and what he called the strato-state sphere, where you find the civil servants who have the higher income in the structure of the state, mingling with the private sector, the most wealthy of this private sector. But for the rest, what he's saying basically is that everybody has lost income. And even the 1% that are the richest in France compared to their equivalent in other countries are not the so rich, are not the top of the ladder. And what he's saying is that in the middle, we have this soft belly where people have a false conscience, a false idea of themselves. They don't look at themselves in the right way. They don't really look at their income. They have the idea of a picture of themselves that don't match the data on their income and their lifestyle. Maybe to give you just a very easy example, some of the bourgeoisie, I will say the upper middle class, think they are high up in the ladder, but compared to their mother's lifestyle, they have lost in income and in lifestyle. They don't have the meds or the people helping them that their mothers or grandmothers used to have. In buildings, you don't have the level of maintenance or the concierge we used to have, because for saving money, you cut the cost, so you don't want a concierge anymore. And you justify these changes by a change in lifestyle. You're more equalitarian, you're more green, you're more... blah blah blah, just to justify in your head the fact that you're losing in lifestyle and comfort, but it's for the better of the earth and the better for the society. Meanwhile, the people who really have a lot of money still enjoy a very comfortable life. So the reason why I'm mentioning this soft belly that Emmanuel Todd mentions in his book, more than mentioned, he explains how these people think. The reason why I'm doing so is because these people change their votes very easily. They can go from Macron to the Green Party within a week's time. It doesn't really matter. They don't really know for whom they should be voting, but they're more social left orientated than right wing. They're younger than the right wing voters, but they can shift from one person to another in the fortnight. So they're very fluctuant, very volatile, and so it's making more and more difficult to anticipate what the next votes will be. This being said, there are cities like Perpignan, which are very interesting because it's a national front that got elected instead of the center and right wing party. And the reason I think it's very important, it's very interesting, is that Perpignan, I show you a map of France so you can understand better. This is France. You have Paris here and you have Perpignan over here. So it's a deep south, southwest. Spain is here. Sorry, Spain is here. And so it's a deep south, and where the most of the socialist people were located. So all this area used to be very socialist. But this time around, it became National Front. It was center-right before that. And it's a big, big change. But Perpignan has suffered a lot from the downfall of the economy. You have 23% of unemployed, lots of problems between different communities. And you can see it was formerly a very booming city back in the 60s and 70s. But the problem with the construction of Europe is that the borders have been opened and the economy has changed tremendously. This was an area where we grew food, veggies, tomatoes, cherries for all of France. And when the borders got open, all the veggies and the food came from the south of Spain. Now it's coming from Morocco. And so this part of France lost huge incomes, and farming has reduced tremendously. It also had a lot of exchanges through the Mediterranean Sea with Algeria and Morocco. And that because of the regime that was put in place in Algeria, the exchanges, the trade exchanges between the two sides of the Mediterranean were downsized, reduced to a minimum. And so Perpignan suffered a lot. But instead of going socialist to green, Perpignan has turned into National Front, which means a patriotic national for national interests. So I think what's happening is that the larger city, the big cities like Lyon, I'll show you again the map. Lyon, which is on the Rhine River. Bordeaux, which is along the Atlantic coast. And Paris, these cities haven't suffered enough yet to become National Front. So I think what I anticipate is that it's going to stay green for a while. And either way, either the center of the cities will just be for the very wealthy and they will keep on being green or left, or there will be very big troubles, big unemployment, very difficult times for these cities, and maybe they will turn National Front in the years to come. Maybe the truth is in between. If the super wealthy can arrange to have their center of the city for themselves and just the troubles outside the city, they will keep on. But if there's major problems within the cities, maybe it will change again and become National Front or maybe another party at that time. To understand that, you have to keep in mind that contrary to what's going on in the US, the center of the city is where you found the wealthiest people. And as you move away from the center, you find the poor or more urban inhabitants. Not saying that the suburbia is not habitated by very wealthy people. It's just saying that the closer to the center you are, the more income you get, you have, or the value of your assets are up. The farther you are from the center, the less income or the less value your assets have. In general, of course, there are exceptions. It's not always the same thing. But it's just a general rule to make you understand how the urban areas are organized here. The third point I wanted to make was the relationship between the municipal elections and the climate change propaganda. I think, of course, people were afraid of the COVID. Majority of people really thought it was terrible and what a disaster, and got afraid, especially the first 2 weeks. The first month was very tense. The second thing that happened is that we had a huge propaganda for climate change or against climate change. And this propaganda has been going on for at least 1, 2, maybe 3, 4, 5 years. I don't recall when there was no mention of the climate change. It's to such a level that it's every day. I don't see any week without the mention of climate change on radio, TV, or newspaper. It's terrible. To such a point that now it's practically a joke sometimes, because you can't really take it seriously. When it's raining, it's climate change. When it's snowing, it's climate change. When it's dry, it's climate change. When it's summer, it's climate change. Everything is climate change. And some voices are raising, some finger are pointing up, saying, maybe it's a bit too much. Maybe it's too simplistic. And maybe we could start to see things differently. And one of these voices is called Didier Raoult. And Didier Raoult is a very, very, very interesting, I'm sorry to repeat that again, interesting man. Didier Raoult is a top virologist located in Marseille in the south of France. I'll show you where Marseille is, here by the Mediterranean Sea. Is a specialist of diseases coming from viruses. He has a research center where also he takes care of people in the hospital. And right from the beginning of the COVID-19, he took care of people and he gave them chloroquine with a mix of, I think it was an antibiotic too. There was a large and big debate in France because chloroquine was, as January 2020, was forbidden to be used for any other purpose than what was allowed before. So you couldn't use chloroquine for another disease or another state that the one it was specifically applicable to. That was a scandal because it deprived the physicians from their freedom to tell what kind of medication or drug they could give to their patients. It was a scandal because the people who are used to chloroquine say, look, I've always taken chloroquine all my life sometimes, especially when you were living in Africa or in countries in the south where you could have malaria, this kind of diseases. And it was a big scandal because chloroquine by itself, as a former health minister of France, Douste Blazy, mentioned, has no side effects. And of course, if you take it in doses and in amounts, that is safe. And Didier Raoult just said, well, you know what, I've tried chloroquine plus antibiotics and it's working fine. So there's no reason why to forbid the use of chloroquine. And what he said too at one point when he was interviewed about climate change. And what he said is, climate change is not a theory right now, it's just an ideology. And he's also mentioned the former US politician Al Gore, and said that Al Gore made a fortune out of climate change. So it basically said on the main French news TV that Al Gore made a fortune thanks to climate change, and that climate change was an ideology. So right now in France, you have two groups of people, the ones who believe in Didier Raoult, believe in chloroquine and his treatment, and the ones who doesn't believe in him and are against him. The ones who don't, sorry, not doesn't. So it's a big fight in between. Of course, I belong to the first one. I think that he's very courageous to say what he says. I'm not so sure about this COVID-19 thing or the treatment with chloroquine. But there's one thing, because I followed it was invited by the National Assembly to testify and witness to what happened. And at one point, he said something that I found, again, interesting, about the fact that kids were not very fragile regarding COVID-19. They were not very concerned with COVID-19, which is not very familiar, because normally this type of virus is virulent and target the children too. When I say target, it's not like there's a virus that says, I want you. I'm saying targeting in the sense that most often children are also get sick when they have coronavirus. And for myself, I have a two-year-old daughter, and it's seldom the case she doesn't get respiratory trouble when she got to the kindergarten, when she gets to the kindergarten. That's caused because of viruses like coronavirus or the flu. Well, that's life. But what he said was very interesting, because he says, since children are exposed to this coronavirus much often than adults, it could or well be the case that they're less sensitive to COVID-19. It's the only explanation that I find almost coherent. I'm still doubtful about this COVID thing, because I don't see how children couldn't be exposed to COVID-19 and not get anything or very little when adults and people of a certain age are targeted. So I have mixed feelings, but I think at least he gives an explanation that makes sense. Voila. I think I gave you the last update, or the first and last update for the moment on what's going on in France, and on the COVID-19, and on the Green Party getting the best, the most amounts of votes. Clearly, the path will be more green propaganda to justify changes in habit, changes in income, and to justify us riding bicycles instead of cars. And well, I will finish up with just an experience. Today, I was doing a visit of an apartment that's on the sixth floor without a lift and for rent. And somebody came with a pregnant woman, his wife. And I just look at them and say, okay, I will show you the place, but there's no way you can rent this place while you're expecting a child, because when the child will be born, you see that sixth floor without lift is infeasible, even if you're very strong. So I just didn't understand how this man, who seems to be a very interesting person, intelligent person, could have imagined that it was feasible to bring his wife 8 months pregnant to this place, thinking that she could be well in an apartment that's on the sixth floor. And eventually I realized that this man was just got elected at the town council of Paris in the fifth arrondissement, and that's why he was visiting a place to rent. So end of the loop. And I hope things will evolve in the best way, but I'm not sure it will come from these new elected people. Bye-bye.
Hello again to everyone. I'd like to add a cultural section to the Via Europa series. And this time it's a little song I think you all know, a very famous one, My Way, from Frank Sinatra. Actually, the first one to sing My Way in America and in English, it's Paul Anka. Paul Anka is a Canadian-born singer, and he was visiting Paris when he got the song from Claude François, but the version in French is called Comme d'habitude. Comme d'habitude in English will translate into As Usual, and hence it became My Way. But it's very different stories. My Way is about a man who is very proud he did things his way, or tried to do things his way, who recounts the story of his life. While the French version is more romantic in some ways, and for sure is more nostalgic. or it's a different type of nostalgia than my way. It's the story of a man who still loves his wife, but she doesn't pay attention to him anymore because they all live a life, they all both live a life of habits, doing the same gesture every day. And it's like they don't have the courage or the guts to say, maybe we should do something different and we should show more love to each other, more passion. So he has nostalgia for the very beginning of the love they had together. Or it's the impression that I got from the lyrics. Both versions are very nice, very interesting, and very powerful, I'd say. And you will find a link below this video where you can listen to Claude François' version. Maybe I will add another version from Mireille Mathieu. Who is Claude François? Claude François was a very and still famous French singer from the 60s and late 70s. He died from a very stupid accident. He was in his bathroom and he wanted to fix an electrical bulb. And he got a shock from electrical shock from the electrical appliance. So he had a heart attack. Very sad. It became, of course, even more famous. But it was a very perfectionist actor and singer. He danced very well. He was famous for his perfectionism and also for all the young women that were dancing around him every time on his show. So I'll leave you with that, and I hope you will enjoy Comme d'habitude. Bye-bye.